Welcome back again to Sundance Reel in the morning. I'm Rick Bruff and with Stacy Domalski. And to wrap up for the show this morning, we have a documentary called King in the Wilderness. And this deals with, well, let's have the director, Peter Coonhart, tell us what this looks at and what brought you to this project.
Right. This is the story that most people don't know about Martin Luther King. It's the story of what happened in the last 3 years of his life after he had been kind of solidified in the consciousness as the hero of civil rights in the South. He broadened his work and moved north and began fighting not just for civil rights but for poverty, for against the war in Vietnam, and he became a very unpopular figure. And it's the story of a man who isn't the leader, the iconic leader that we read about in the textbooks, but a real human being, and how hard that was for him to push forward and accomplish what he needed to accomplish in a world that was increasingly turning against him.
So one of the things that I think people, especially younger people who weren't around when Martin Luther King was around, that they struggle with was he promoted and preached activism through peace, nonviolence, and yet the way he ended was extremely violent. So the dichotomy or the irony, actually, of that, does this address some of that? Like you said, go behind the scenes more of what he was doing the last 3 years of his life. Because from just a general perspective, the last 3 years of his life was like, things that only seem to make sense today. Like, I have teenage sons, and they're like, I don't get why somebody would kill this guy. So do you address some of those things that...
Yeah, absolutely. The struggle of the world with nonviolence is a big part of the story. Nonviolence was in vogue in the South. When he brought those techniques to the North and brought his battle to the North to integrate housing, for example, in Chicago, he was pilloried. He felt more resistance from white Northerners in Chicago than he ever did in the South.
Interesting.
And then at the eve of his death, he was at his least popular in his life. Many blacks thought that he was too soft, and because of nonviolence, they saw nonviolence as weakness, and we correct that myth in the documentary. And whites saw him as a radical communist. So he couldn't win on either side. We have a great line from a black preacher in Chicago when he comes to Chicago, and they asked the preacher, what do you say to Dr. King coming to your town to try to integrate housing? And he said, I would tell him to get the hell out. And you can imagine that it really crystallizes how he was viewed then, how different it was the day before he was assassinated compared to the day after.
And Trey Ellis, the executive producer here, it was just mentioned before air that you did a lot of the interviews. And who did you talk to from that period?
Yeah, it's amazing. Taylor Branch, the great historian, mm-hmm. who was another executive producer, he interviewed Andy Young and Harry Belafonte and this great Reverend C.T. Vivian. I interviewed Jesse Jackson, Joan Baez, John Lewis, all these other people, that Diane Nash, people that for me, like, they were superheroes. For a lot of them, because of their age, because it was so long ago, 50 years ago, and they were in middle age at that time, it might be, unfortunately, some of the last long interviews. So it was really important for us, I think, to get them down. And I would sit with them for 2 or 4 hours at a time and look right in their eyes. And that's sort of a big chunk of this interview.
You know, and we've looked at early interviews some of these great civil rights leaders have given. And at that point, for instance, when Eyes on the Prize was produced, they were still kind of in it. They had a different attitude today. They were ready to tell the story as they really wanted to tell the story. They didn't want to hold anything back. They didn't want to have anything die with them. So I think they were more revealing than they have been in the past.
That's a really interesting observation, because you're right. When you're in on the journey, when you're in the middle of the journey, you don't have perspective. But once you've been through it and you look back, it's reflective, and you can see the highs and the lows and the goods and the bads from it. So you're right. Nobody has actually looked at it from that point of view yet until apparently now.
Yeah, and the human king is a big – that was, to me, the most exciting part of the story. And I think also because – people talked a lot about, even from the recent, like the Kennedy tapes that were revealed, about affairs, about other things, that he was a regular person mm-hmm. compared to all the other people, all the other politicians and preachers of that time. So that freed, I think, a lot of our interviewees to tell the truth about him. And that truth was always like, he actually is more heroic in knowing the whole man.
He's human. That he's human.
Human, yeah. But also superhuman in a way that he's human, but you can get there from here. If you really fight hard yourself and really keep up the fight, I think he energizes you to do your best as well. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think before this documentary, the kids we talked about, think of them like George Washington and Martin Luther King sort of as like contemporaries almost. They're all just sort of guys out there and the old guys.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I think that happened to King way quicker than it happened to George Washington. We went back in the research for this film and looked at all the news coverage of King from 68 to 2014. And without exception, King became labeled as the I Have a Dream speech giver,
mm-hmm.
period. And so whatever news story was happening that involved King, it was always using that clip, I Have a Dream. And it just categorized him in such a way and identified him in a way that became boring over time and became wooden over time. So I do think what Trey was saying about learning about the man and learning how learning how much of a workaholic he was. He just couldn't stop. He was on a track of change and he couldn't stop. So as this film progresses, you see him almost like going down a river, and he can't stop the current. He must follow to the end.
He kind of became a victim of his own success.
He knew where, besides the famous speech, mountaintop speech, before his on the eve of his death, he would often talk about. He understood that that's how he was going to end. And also, if you think of all the bad press that he got, then nobody was harder on him than himself. And his Andy Young and all of his advisors were trying to really trying to buck him up and say, look, you can't have the weight of the entire world on your shoulders. And he just couldn't shake it. So there's a sadness to him too that I think that people didn't know.
In that same vein, workaholic and a sadness at bearing the burden, did you talk to any of his family, any of his surviving family?
We didn't speak to his family. They've been historically very guarded about his reputation and about who he is. So we thought sitting down talking with his friends, I mean, everybody, they're all, in their 80s and some 90s, people that knew him at that moment. I think that it was really, it sheds an amazing light on him that I think we'll never get again.
How old would he have been now?
That is a good question.
That's a great question. No idea.
The people, I mean, the range of of his contemporaries from Andy Young on is like middle 80s to early 90s.
Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see if he had lived, his perspective on everything that's changed since then and what's going on now. That's
absolutely
why.
Yeah. The film Qing in the Wilderness, I think you've got your first showing coming up at the Mark tomorrow at 5:30, and then you move over to the Temple on Tuesday. And Redstone 1 on Saturday is your last showing in this area. It's 6:30 p.m. And a week from today, you have a one down in Salt Lake at the Wadner. So Peter Kuhnhart, the director, and Trey Ellis, the executive producer, thank you very much for wrapping up the Sundance Reel with us. I'm Rhett Bruff here with the multi-talented Stacey Demolsky, Cecil B. Demolsky.
Yeah.
And running the board for us is Sophia, keeping us all in line. I should mention that we're presented by Sandra Lee Incorporated, presenting the documentary Prescription Early Detection, A Cancer Journey with Sandra Lee. Thank you very much for being with us this weekend. We'll see you next year.